When driving on the road, it's important to remember to keep your hands at 10 and 2.
And your radio here from 3 to 6. Beep, 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 beep. Yeah. It's The Drive Home with Jillian Barbary and John Phillips.
It's 3:05 on Talk Radio 790 KABC. Jillian Barbary, John Phillips in the Morongo Casino Resort and Spa Studios. 800-222-KABC is the phone number, 1-800-222-5222.
Let's just get into it.
How are you?
I'm great, but I want to get into it because our guest is here, and I could talk to him for 3 hours, but we only have one. So let's get into it with Steve Jones, also known as Jonesy.
Hello.
Hello, Jonesy. And you might know him from our KLOS side of things. He does noon to 2 here, and we call it 12 Bells.
Jonesy's Jukebox.
Jonesy's Jukebox. I've been lucky enough to hang out with you on that show. And I read your book. I have to tell you, I read it halfway to England and then the other half coming home. And so it really put it into perspective for me where you come from and what you, who you are and why you are who you are. Does that make sense?
Sure.
So you come from West London.
I'm a legend.
You are. You're a bloody legend, especially in England.
I'm a living legend.
You
do you embrace that or do you shy away from
it? No, it sounds ridiculous.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
It sounds ridiculous.
Well, in the book, you sort of learn, I've known you for a couple of, I guess a year and a half now on and off throughout the station, and I know you as a person from here. We don't socialize, we don't, I know, did you just spill on yourself?
I just tired. Wet myself.
It wouldn't be the first time it's happened in here.
Especially in here, yes. But you were part of a huge movement that came to America that we know as this. What would you call it? A punk rock movement? What was it?
Yes. Punk rock, I suppose.
Well, but it's when I was reading your book, it was very different. It didn't come across as, you didn't seem like a bad guy, although you were a major shoplifter. You liked to nick things.
A lot of stuff. I'm sure I upset some people in a roundabout way.
Well, you talk about growing up on the West Side, and I went to Shepherd's Bush, where he's from, like near that area. I
West
saw
London, yeah.
West London, and there's not a lot going on there. But you talk about your childhood being pretty idyllic with your mom and your nan, your grandmother, until you were about six, and your mom, did she remarry that bloke, or did she?
Never got married, but lived with him till the day he died, which was around 2007.
And so do you think that what happened to you with him formed you, who you are, helped form who you are to get out of there?
I think it had definitely had a part to play in it. I don't think it was everything, him filling me when I was 10.
Yeah.
But it definitely made me not feel safe at home and didn't want to go home. And that's when that one time that happened where he made me,
you know,
play with his thing.
Yeah, his mom was out and he made him. And I always tell
people. Mom was in hospital.
Even worse. And when you tell people that being molested doesn't have to be an ongoing thing, it can happen once, and that one time it can change your entire 10-year-old universe. Is that what it was like for you?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't know what was going on.
Of course.
And like I hear about a lot of people who get fiddled with, they think they had some part to play in it, and it was they kind of instigated it. But how can a 10-year-old know anything?
You don't.
You don't, right? So, no. You take on, it seems like guys kind of hold more angry stuff about it, and I think women have different ways of dealing with it.
I think at the end of the day, you self-medicate when stuff like that happens, whether it's sex or as you get older.
Kleptomania.
You could steal. That's a good point, which he did a lot of, and drinking and drugs.
And peeping Tom in.
Yeah, you were a really skilled peeping Tom. I was pretty impressed when you got caught by the cops. And what did you tell them? You were casing the joint?
I told them I was breaking in there because I was too embarrassed to tell them what I was really doing.
But to be, how old, you were what? Preteen, like 13, 14?
Yeah, 12, 13.
That's a little more advanced than probably your friends were doing. I mean, they might have been looking at girly mags, but they weren't out looking for real women to spy on.
They weren't peeping Tom in, that's for sure.
What do you think you did more of, peeping or stealing?
Stealing, for sure.
Was it fun?
Yeah, it was. It was a drive for me. It kept me going. When I wake up, I think, what am I going to do today? What's going to be exciting? What am I going to do? Like, as far as stealing, who, you know, what am I going to get? And it was, I never woke up and thought, you know what, I'm going to have a nice walk in the park and look at the ducks. You know, that never happened. That didn't enter my head. It was always about a fix, a fix, a fix. And it was all related to dealing with that situation.
Trauma.
Would you steal small items from, like, convenience stores, or would you steal cars?
If I was hungry.
He ended up stealing off his idol. He stole off. I mean, you graduated rather quickly, and you stole from David Bowie, and not just a regular anything. You stole his equipment. Yes,
some of it. But
how does one even do that? Ah, I know, the invisible cloak. Talk about that. That's a theme in your book.
Yeah. But to answer your question, I did steal many, many cars as well, just for joyriding, not for...
Didn't you steal a bulldozer or some sort of massive land equipment?
Well, that's how I kind of learned to drive, with these lorries, they were called, which were like, what do they call them here? Trucks.
They're like,
trucks.
Big.
Dump trucks.
Dump trucks. They're like moving, you know, land and dirt. But...
I just figured it out, how to drive all that stuff at 12, 13 years old. Not on the road. For the first year, I was just on these big open wastelands.
Right.
And they left the trucks and stuff there, and I figured out how the mechanics worked, which, you know, it's pretty similar to a car. So
one of the themes in the book that carries from the beginning to the end is the invisible cloak. And I really resonated with me, because I feel like when you're a child and you're molested, which I was as well, I really related to this for you have no voice. So... when I told someone that I thought could do something about it, they didn't believe me. So you're voiceless. And so you start to act out to believe that perhaps you
have... Fantasy.
Fantasy, that you have a voice. So tell us about your invisible cloak and how that... I mean, how that worked for you, because it really seemed to work well for you.
It did. It did. It got a bit thin sometimes, the cloak. Sometimes it didn't work. I couldn't have recharged the batteries that day or something. But most of the time, I convinced myself that people couldn't see me when I go into toy shops or wherever it would be. I would make out that I was meant to be there.
Which is a pretty ballsy thing for a kid, because if you're in a situation with adults, you think they're watching you. And I'm wondering if the invisible cloak came from where that came from. But it's kind of a tenacious thing to do.
I convinced myself that I was meant to be there, and everyone else knew
that
I had to be there.
Supposed to be there.
Yeah.
Did you ever get caught?
Well, that's what I said. Sometimes I didn't charge the batteries in the invisible cloak. But a lot of the time, I did. And it is amazing. If someone walked in here now and they was confident, You might not say, oh, who's that? What are they doing here? Because they've got this
air about them.
Confidence that they're meant to be. And it actually, it really does work. I should write a book about it, how to do that.
Well, you know,
and sell it, how to get confidence.
How to guide to shoplifting.
How to get confidence of being invisible.
Yeah, because it honestly, I was thinking about it and I thought, well, does he think he's invisible because he was molested? Which I always felt like, obviously I don't have a voice, nobody's listening. And he took it and did something really kind of cool with it. I mean, you went backstage, essentially, like he belonged there. That's how he was able to enact stuff. And I'm curious as to how, I mean, I know you were a bit of a hooligan, but you always had a good side to you. While the others were kind of doing maybe more defiant things, you seemed to have a good side to you, a side that wouldn't go that distance.
Yeah, I wasn't a violent person. I'm not a violent person. I don't like it. I acted like I was into all that, you know, skinhead beating people up and all that. But that was not really me.
You're kind of into fashion and kind of, your dad was a teddy boy. And
yeah.
That's all about being kind of cool and looking good.
Yeah, it was all about the detail in clothes for me and having the right clothes and being the face. You know, that was more important to me than the actual physically wanted to go out and beat someone up because they supported a different team, or they were gay, or they were from a different country. That didn't sit well with me, although I did go along with it sometimes because I had to.
We're talking to Steve Jones of the Sex Pistols. His new book, Lonely Boy, is out right now. You can get it online at Amazon.com.
You can get it here in America, physical copy. Like, I snagged one from you early, but next week they're out, or are they out now?
Yeah, you had the English one. American one's a little bit different as far as the artwork, I think.
Oh.
A different picture on the back.
Well, I'm glad I got the English one, because my dad was born and raised in London, so
I'll give you the American one, too.
How does the whole Sex Pistol thing come together? I know Malcolm McLaren and Vivian Westwood were sort of masterminds, but you were already playing in bands.
Yeah, I wouldn't say masterminds. I think Malcolm was kind of a fifth member of the band, is a better way to put it. Vivian was very, obviously, Vivian Westwood,
yeah,
very fashion orientated, and they came up with a lot of clothes that we used to wear. But we were no puppets by any means. It wasn't Malcolm dangling the strings like he'd like to believe what it was.
Well, one of my favorite stories is when Vivian tells him there's a great-looking guy and he's got the look and his name's John, and Malcolm picks out the John, but it wasn't John whose name, Sid Vicious, his real name was John. He picked out John Lydon, and she said, that's not the guy.
Yeah.
But they both ended up in the Sex Pistols.
Yeah, eventually. But I think the right one was the right call. The one, Johnny Rotten, was the right one. Sid wouldn't have been the right guy.
For the lead,
for the lyrical content, there's no way Sid would have wrote the words like, you know, God Save the Queen and Anarchy in the UK. So we did have the right singer. Sid got slung in the deep end, and I think John wanted him in the band because he was always envious that me and Cookie, the drummer,
right,
was one of my best friends since I was 10 years old. And I think, you know, John felt left out when he used to see me and Cookie walking off and he didn't have his buddy.
Tell me about what life was like on the road during that era, because that was an era where you weren't mimicking what others were doing. You were kind of creating it as you were going along. You were the originals. Mm. Would it be possible, looking back at it, to go on the road and perform in front of the crowds that you performed in front of and had been as creative as you were right then and there, without the drugs, without the alcohol, without all the addictions? Or did one kind of feed into the other and help the other?
It was just a short period of time that Sex Pistols was together. You know, it was really short.
Which is amazing.
Really fast. And, we did it on a shoestring. We didn't have any money back then. Most of the equipment we used I stole.
Was stolen.
Never had any roadies. Never had any bodyguards, never had any stuff like that, you know. So it was a whole different time then. I mean, I'm sure there's some bands who are struggling, are doing the same things. But it was a period where it was pretty grim in England, not like in America. It was a different situation that was going on.
Grim in what way?
It was bleak, and what you guys were screaming about was like this anarchy, which is, you know, the hierarchy. They're living high on the hog, and look at how the workers are down here, and it kind of created a movement.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't really give a hoot about that. I just wanted to get laid.
And you did. There weren't many people that you didn't. I mean, once you got that whole sexual thing down, you really went for it. And it kind of created, it took up a lot of your mind space and your time and, would you say? Energy?
Well, it was another thing added to the many other addictions that I had going on. You know, I still had the stealing. I still had, you know, just wanting to act out in whatever way possible. Then that was thrown into the mix once I discovered girls and orgasms.
But you never let girls get in the way. That's a bad thing to say, but you and Cookie seem to be more into the music, whereas I think Sid and John Lydon or Johnny Rotten seem to be more into either the drugs or the Nancy Spungen. When she came along, she was suddenly at your rehearsals and you were like, what's going on? Did that put a dagger? Was that the end of it for you?
Yeah, and it was pretty much well, I'll tell you what was the beginning of the end. After we did the Bill Grundy show.
Oh, he was horrible to you. John, you got to hear about this guy. And I like how you handled him.
Yeah. So what did he do to you?
Well, we were signed to EMI. We had the single "God Save the Queen" coming out. We just cut that, and we were rehearsing to do a tour around England. And we were rehearsing, we got a phone call. Oh, you're going on the Today Show. That was the name of the show. It was 6 o'clock. Everyone watches this show.
At night.
And this guy called Bill Grundy was the host. So we're like, okay. So we stopped rehearsing. A limo took us down there. We get put in the green room. There's bottles of Blue Nun. I downed three of them because I'm nervous.
What's Blue Nun? Is it
wine? Yeah, okay. Cheap wine.
They like to liquor you up before you go out on set. Yeah.
I guess so.
They do that at the Tonight Show, too. Didn't they do that with
you? Oh, yeah, yeah. They called it the bar cart, and I indulged.
Yeah. So I'm pretty lit up by the time we actually walk in there. And we go in there, we sit down. We had a couple of our fans with us. One of them was Susie and the Banshees. She wasn't in Susie and the Banshees at that time. She was a fan.
Wow.
And a couple of others. And he starts talking, and he had no desire to want to talk about our tour or anything. He just wanted to belittle us, really.
It was very condescending to you.
Yeah, yeah. So he started in, and we just give it back to him, you know.
Was that out of character for him, or is that what they do on that show? Did you know you were walking into that?
Well, everyone normally kisses his ass, I'm sure. But he stumbled on the wrong bunch of teenage youths who couldn't care less about him, you know. And it just backfired. You know, and it went out live. I don't know why it went out live. They still had the 6-7 button rule back then.
He was cursy, and basically, you know, but at the end of the day, the stuff you said to him made you guys what you kind of, you were talking the talk. You weren't just walking the walk. In other words, your manager freaked out, right? He said, this is going to be the end of us.
If you would have seen his face, this is the guy who is the big mastermind, okay? If you would have seen his face, when all the phones lighting up and everyone's freaking out.
But didn't you answer phones on the way out, which is hysterical?
Yeah.
He was answering his own phones for his own complaints, people complaining about him.
Our guest is Steve Jones. The new book is out now. It's called Lonely Boy, Tales of a Sex Pistol. You can get it at Amazon.com. More with Steve Jones coming up in minutes. This is The Drive Home on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Talk Radio 790
KABC.
It's 3:27 on Talk Radio 790 KABC. Do not forget, the Kings play here tomorrow night at 7 as they take on the Detroit Red Wings with Nick Nixon and Daryl Evans on the call. It's the Kings and Red Wings tomorrow at 7 on the home of the Kings, Talk Radio 790 KABC. We're joined by Steve Jones, who's got a new book that's out, Lonely Boy, Tales of a Sex Pistol. You now work with us here at the radio station.
Our condolences.
Our sister station, KLOS. How do you like doing the radio show compared to being on the road?
I like doing radio. I'm not a big fan of traveling. I like playing other people's music, and I like having guests.
Well, you get the greatest guests, too. I always talk about the fact when I walk in and they'll say, welcome, Jack Black, or welcome, Johnny Depp, welcome, Dave Navarro, welcome, Dave Grohl. Is it a matter of knowing these people over the years, or is it a matter of them being fans of yours?
I think both, yeah, for sure. So, I like doing it. There's some days I don't want to be in here. You know, it's a bit of a drag.
Well, it's like every other job.
Yeah, 5 days a week.
So,
especially when you know you're going to run into us in the hallways.
Yeah, that's never fun.
Oh, that's all right. That's the best part.
Oh, good, because I do rummage through his drawers every once in a while.
But drawers?
You know, the ones in your
pants.
My
knickers?
Your knickers.
My pantaloonies?
Listen, a lot of people have been in those pantaloonies. Let's discuss.
Some miles on those tires?
Oh, yeah. Well, there's some very famous women and some not so famous women. But I love how you're honest about everything in the book from, you know, whether it's drinking or whether it's drugs. Drugs didn't seem to be a big thing. It seemed to be booze and sex for you. Is that a fair assessment?
It was until I discovered drugs, then the sex left. When I discovered heroin, that's when I stopped having sex. You have no desire for sex. I don't know if you've ever.
Well, your sex is heroin, right? I mean, is that what?
No, you just physically have no desire. You
but how
kills the sex
this
drive.
This is what fascinates me. I hear heroin, you vomited when you did it. That's all I hear about is how you vomit when you do it. And so, like,
it's
what
appealing.
Would
you have to
tell you to do it? How do you get past vomit?
You just try it again until you stop throwing up, then it's all good.
Doesn't sound fun. Now, I was just in London where you're still, you know, the Sex Pistols are everywhere. You can't go to the markets without seeing T-shirts. Does that make you feel, and I know that, you know, when things broke up, it sort of took sides. You and Cookie took one side, and I think Sid Vicious and Johnny Rotten sort of were on the other side.
Well,
Is that fair?
They went separate ways.
And bad, well,
they
death.
They
one went.
Yeah, they didn't really hang out, though, after we broke up. The only two kind of stayed close was me and Cookie.
And were you, so you weren't really surprised when you got the news that Sid was gone?
No, and I was in such a haze, it didn't even really register when I heard that he died. It didn't mean anything at the time.
When did you get 100% cleaned up? And I just mean sober. And,
I got sober about originally about 30 years ago. Messed about for a little bit, but now I've been clean sober 26 years.
Which is incredible. It's a great... Did you ever think in your wildest dreams that you would hit that mark?
No.
26.
You kidding? No. And if you would have told me that, I would have... it wouldn't have been possible.
I was fascinated by the fact that you talked about... You didn't like being a front man. When you were out there and you were singing and they had you... I think they had... Were they testing you? What was that about? When Malcolm said... And you were just not... You were not into it.
Well, it was no them...
Yeah.
At that point, it was just me, Cookie, Glenn Matlock, who was the original bass player, and this bloke called Wally. And we were just rehearsing, and I was singing. You know, I was the front guy.
You were the front guy. The band actually was called...
Q.E. Jones
and the Sex Pistols.
Yeah.
How did that get dropped, and were you okay with it not being Cutie Jones? Because it was with a K, right? Cutie Jones?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
You were the original Kardashian. What? Sorry, I said that.
I didn't want to be the front guy. We did one show at this caf down King's Road late at night, and I just was horrified. I'm like, this is not for me being the front guy. I just can't do it.
Do you think that's why today you love what you've got? You've got a microphone. You don't have to deal with anyone but the guests that you want in. You've created your own space. You've never been married. Girlfriend, have you had a full girlfriend or not really?
Not really.
Right, so...
Do you want one?
Not really.
Yeah.
Why not?
That's what I'm getting to. All of this seems to be part of that.
It's too much work. I like my things in order at home. I don't like people touching things. Some things
they can touch.
Something, maybe.
But that is... interesting to me in and of itself. And I always wonder, not to get too psychobabble, but being what happened to you traumatizes you as a kid, and it really sets the stage for later relationships. I believe that. Intimacy becomes issue. When you talk about sex, you're able to completely separate it from the intimate act that it is for other, I call them regular people or normal people that haven't been traumatized. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, but I also think part of my thing is the stepfather. That was one thing. But my mother, who didn't really want to have a kid, I think that's where the real intimacy, not be able to have a relationship, I think that mainly comes from my mum, who had me when she was like 19 and is a kind of cold person.
Was she proud of your success?
I guess so. I don't really know. She's proud that I was famous. But I don't think she liked the fame that I had being in the Sex Pistols. She would have liked it if I would have been in the Beatles. Would have probably made her more happy.
Right.
You know, because we had such a bad rap and we were against the Queen. And I think she's more of a person who's into the Queen and all that.
Well, I think any mother would probably kind of be like that. But you always had friends that had, like Cookie's parents. There were friends' parents that just took you in and got it and they were... accepting. And
yeah,
do you think that you don't feel like you've missed out on anything then, by any means?
No, I don't feel like it. I mean, I would like the option of having a relationship and then deciding this is not for me, but I can never get to that point of having a relationship.
But you have very healthy friends, and I won't mention who they are, but you have a very healthy friendship with a couple that's super successful. They seem to have it really together. And do you ever look at them and you spend time with them and think, that would be kind of cool to have somebody to have my back? Or do you just say, look, I've gone this life on my own. I've come this far. You came from Shepherd's Bush, England, and yeah. you've created this life for yourself here in Hollywood and Los Angeles.
I have flashes of it would be nice if there was a sole person. It's like, as you say, would have your back. I have flashes of that, that would be nice. But, I'm 61. I'm so set in my ways, man. Mm-hmm. I don't have a lot of patience.
Yeah.
And you know what else? Going back to what we talked about during the break, on your radio show, Jonesy's Jukebox, you don't play the same 20 songs over and over and over again. You have eclectic tastes, and you like to put different songs on your program, and you expose people to different music, sometimes music they otherwise would never be exposed to. Right. And if you have that outlook on life where you like variety and you wake up one morning and you want to go in this direction and the next day you wake up and you want to go in that direction and you want to have the ability to wake up every morning and do that, then being in a relationship and knowing I'm going to wake up next to the same person every day and they're going to cook me the same egg for breakfast every morning. That's just something that's the antithesis of how you live your life and how you see the world.
I'm going to have the same eggs. I'm going to have to bash at one.
I want to have a bangers and mash. I want some.
I said bangers and mash, bitch.
I can't imagine that. But you sort of get to call
the sausages. Get over there in the corner.
I can never imagine you ever.
No.
But you've kind of you bring up a point that when you go through life and you get accustomed, and they say the older you get, the more set in your ways. It would be very hard at this point for you, I imagine, to even share your space. I mean, you love your soccer. I follow you. I know you do great Instagram videos yeah. that you put out there that are like, whenever I'm down, I go to his Instagram. It immediately makes me laugh. I love the humor. And that's also something that, without sounding, you've created a world where you're not antisocial, but you get to call all the shots. So yeah. when you do your Instagram, and you've set it up at your house, so you go to Northern California to get away from it all. You reach millions of people because you still have millions of fans, but you get to do it on your terms.
Yeah.
And I think there's something probably comforting in that. You don't have to go out on stage at night and do that.
Yeah, and I just, I like the old social media thing. It's got good parts to it, like goofing around on Instagram or whatever. But I don't suffer fools. I've got no time for stupidity, and unfortunately, there's a lot of stupid people.
Well, you follow me on Twitter, so let's not go that far.
Yeah, you're right.
But you've got your life down, and you've got it to a point where you're comfortable. Is there anything, like when I was reading all of your bands that you listened to, who you liked coming up and how they changed, maybe it was Led Zeppelin or Mott the Hoople, whoever it was that kind of spoke to you, and then you met them, like Rod Stewart. That was such a great story, and I like knowing that you've had some of these people in the studio.
Yeah.
And I know that you've worked on yourself. Have you ever had to ask anyone in the studio for, well, Malcolm McLaren came in, that was a great interview, but have you ever had to ask for, not forgiveness, but that sort of like closure to anyone in the studio? Has it ever been uncomfortable?
Well, there was the drummer from the Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars, who came in the studio a few months ago with Tony Visconti, who was the producer, and they were doing this tour, this Holy Holy, this Bowie album. And I nicked a couple of his cymbals, the drummer.
So when? How long ago?
When did I meet him?
When did you nick the cymbals? We're talking 25 years ago?
It was David Bowie's last show as the Spiders from Mars at Hammersmith Odeon.
Oh, my gosh. So we're talking a long time.
45 years ago, 72, 73. And so he came on the show, Woody Woodmansey, the drummer, and I thought I knew I was going to make an amends for him, but I wanted to do it live. I didn't want to do it off and then let him know that I was going to do it. I wanted his reaction live, and he was like, "I said, listen, I've got to make amends to you. I stole your cymbals."
I was a bit of a klepto back then.
And he says, yeah, why do you think I have LoJack on the new ones?
Yeah, I said, so what can I do to set it right? He goes, don't worry about it, Steve. He's from up north, from Hull, I think he is. I said, now let me give you some money.
He said,
well, give me $100. And I think I gave him $300.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And did it probably made you feel good.
Of course it made me feel good. And he was over the moon. He was chuffed. I don't think he has a lot of money.
My God, if you did shows on every musician you stole from, it could be, you know, hours worth.
I'm waiting for some phone calls.
I bet.
In this book, yeah. There's a few in there. I'm expecting some phone
calls. I mean,
these
were people that you actually, you love David Bowie. Yeah. I mean, your office, you have a poster of David Bowie. There are people that have posters of you everywhere, and you have David Bowie. And I was thinking, and you stole from him. This is like a guy that you revered, and yet you stole, you know?
Well, you know, yeah, I did. But really, there was nothing I stole of his.
Right.
It was the drummer, the bass player. I took nicked his amp.
You take somebody's boots.
That's the Motley Hoop. That's my Instagram. I just made that up.
Oh, okay.
I thought they were the same size.
Wait, was that Fabian Fontaine?
Yeah,
brilliant story.
You like that character?
Do I like him? That's who I would hang out. That's basically who I met in England and hung out with for a week. Yeah.
Right. Well, I remember blokes like him when I was a teenager. The Dumbbells, them drag queens. Me and Cookie used to hang out with people like that.
Oh, I love it.
That's where I got to know that shtick.
Well, you do it very well. I was thinking you obviously are you're comfortable and well-versed in it. So that's where that was from. Yeah, those boots were fantastic.
Yeah.
Who's given you the most negative reaction to the book?
No one. Funny enough.
No one mentioned in there has confronted you or?
No. Hold on. What was the question?
Who's had the biggest negative reaction to the book? Was anyone upset about what you wrote?
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
There's a couple of people who was upset.
It's interesting. I just finished it and I'm trying to think of, you never spoke ill. Maybe what you did say a few times was, this is my truth. This is sort of the way I recall it going down. But I like the honesty and about the set. You slept with, let me think, who? Oh, wow.
There was a lot more that I didn't put in there.
I know, because you told me that privately, and I can imagine. And you did it because they would be very upset.
Yeah.
Because they're famous.
Yeah, and you know, I would like to have put it all in there, but.
That'd be a very big volume, a massive volume.
Yeah.
Huge.
How many trees would you have to kill?
Be a lot.
Yeah.
Our guest is Steve Jones. We'll take a quick break. Be back with more with Steve Jones. He's the host of Jonesy's Jukebox over on our sister station, KLOS. The book is Lonely Boy, Tales of a Sex Pistol. Don't go anywhere. 790 KABC. And we continue at 3:47, Talk Radio 790 KABC. Jillian Barbary, John Phillips here until 6. Coming up after the news at 4, Eddie Scarry joins us. Wait till you find out what kind of money Megyn Kelly was asking Fox for.
Crazy.
Before she decided to sign with NBC. We're going to get into all those details.
By the way, Howard Stern agreed with you. He said, biggest mistake. It's going to flop, and she's going to wish she was back at Fox.
You know who we forgot about yesterday?
Who?
Not only did it not work for Anderson Cooper and Katie Couric, Meredith Vieira from the Today Show.
She was pretty likable.
Another one who did the daytime syndicated talk show thing that didn't work.
Well, thank God we're all in radio. That's what I say at the
end. It's great.
I like when you do your English or your American accent. I'm sorry, you play the manager of that one on Instagram.
Poco.
Poco.
Oh no,
the manager.
Oh, the recent one. Yeah, he's trying to get a gig for Gary Newman.
For Gary Newman, and they're playing "Here in My Car." That was the best.
Yeah, and the other one is two of them. Do you like them ones?
I love them.
Done them before. I've done them. If you look way back down on the bottom of my Instagram, I was the marketing guy with the headphones.
Yeah, no, I love. And from that grew the manager of the band. Okay.
Yeah.
But he's got a very, he's American and he speaks like this. So to see you do an American accent is
like Chappelle
funny.
Doing the white guy.
Yeah, it's great.
It's pretty good.
No, it's great.
Hold on. Let's see if we can get it up.
Yeah, pull it up. So my favorites by far. Are my favorite, as you know, is the one where he's singing and he falls over in his platforms.
You love that one.
I beyond love it.
You love
I laugh so hard I cry because he's got it set up, John, to where There's a screen. He's got a lighting. He's got the da-da-da-da. But he's filming it himself, so it's like he's by himself. And so when he fell, he was worried that these things were going to come falling on him. And so his wig came off and his boots and his ass is in the camera. It is, to this day.
It's a good one.
Oh, it's a great one.
I can't play the other ones. I just remember because there's a lot of swearing in them.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. Well, the
Colin
manager
thanks you but if, for not playing yeah, it.
If you want to watch it, it's at jonesysjukebox.com. That's my...
Your website that you've got all of the
Twitter
stuff on.
And Instagram.
And your Instagram. But it's pretty easy to go on. I just went on Instagram and pulled up...
Jonesy's Jukebox.
Yeah, and he does all these different characters. But also, it's fun. Like, if it's Thanksgiving, he puts on the pilgrim's outfit. And you're not afraid. Like, you'll be naked. There's a picture in this book. By the way, if you haven't gotten the book, it's called Lonely Boy, Steve Jones, Tales from a Sex Pistol. It is... you know, I would have read this whether I knew you or not. I love biographies. I love autobiographies. And I love music. But you're so honest that there's a great picture in here of you sitting in a toilet naked. And then if you go on your Instagram, here you are 30 years later sitting naked on a toilet, this time with a squatty potty.
I love going home and just taking my clothes off.
Yeah.
It's the first thing I do, yeah. Whether it's freezing out or it's
you
summer.
You don't care.
I have to take my clothes off. All I do is walk around with black briefs. That's all I do.
Well, he does a lot of videos and Instagrams in his black briefs. But what is that about? Is that the cleansing you? Like, I go home and take a shower, but I put clothes on. For you, is it cleansing? What, even if it's cold out, you take your clothes? What is that?
I just don't like wearing clothes.
Oh.
I just don't like wearing clothes. It's as simple as that. There's no big, like...
Huh. Well, I noticed, especially...
Reason.
I was watching a lot of YouTube videos of you.
Mm. I'm always whipping my finger.
Always.
Always and, dropping my pants.
Yeah, I was waiting for a lot of those clips. And when I don't sleep, I get on YouTube, and I was watching you on stage. And it's the picture. It's ironic because it's the picture that's on the cover of the book. And you're wearing a mesh sort of see-through shirt. And you talked about the fact, which I thought was amazing, that you guys were told, like, there was a pill that could keep you going. It was not... It's like, but it is speed, but it's like it's a speed that you get from a doctor, Dr. Feelgood, so you guys could look really skinny and look great on stage.
Yeah.
I always thought it was just girls that did that stuff.
Well, I did the speed more for me. Well, it wasn't to look skinny. We were all skinny back then, you know, when you're 19, 20. But what the speed was for me to give me attention to learn to play guitar. Otherwise, I would have never have learned.
So it's basically Adderall. It's like ADD medication because you couldn't concentrate to
not
play guitar?
Not for 2 minutes.
Oh.
If I took the speed, I could play it over and over for like 10 hours. And I had to learn in like 3 months before we did our first show. Otherwise, I wouldn't be sitting here now.
So
if
it's
it
like
weren't
what,
for speed.
The housewives that vacuum at 3 in the morning.
Right.
And
yes.
You know, spick and span. So why did you have 3 months before you guys? So you got together and you were successful locally. You said, let's take this on the road. You
no,
have 3 months?
I got slung off singing. I got slung over to guitar because that was the only opportunity. That was the only spot left. We got Johnny Rotten to sing, so the only spot was get rid of Wally, who was but ugly, and put me.
Poor Wally.
I know. God bless him.
Poor Wally.
He's dead.
True,
he's dead. So
wait a minute. What if he was a great performer? You guys didn't care because
you got to sell albums.
No, you got to look good. Man.
Oh my God,
you got to look good.
That's hysterical. So you guys all, look a certain way.
He had a face like Henry VIII. He looked like a pig-eyed.
So who told Wally, Malcolm?
No, we kind of just see you later, Wally. Nice knowing you.
See you later,
Wally. You're too ugly to perform.
Look, take
You're
a look out. At yourself, Wally. You know what was sad, though? That I got, you know, like you get moments in your head that kind of stick with you?
Yeah.
Like a few years later.
When you slept with that fat, scary woman that was ugly?
No, that was nothing.
Oh.
This was not anything embarrassing, but I used to go and get up and play with a Clash. This was like 3 years later, maybe, mm-hmm. from after when Wally got the boot. And I didn't know.
I love the Clash.
I didn't know what happened to Wally. So I went back.
Probably went out of facelift and like went and lived.
There was no help. There was no facelift that what could have helped him.
Oh my God.
Beyond medicine.
Poor bastard.
All right, hold that thought. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with more with Steve Jones. The book is Lonely Boy, available at Amazon.com. This is The Drive Home, Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Say, what is this?
You know what it is. 790.
KABC.
drive home, sponsored by Morongo Casino Resort and Spa. We'll tell you all about what Megyn Kelly turned down from Fox in just a few minutes. Right now, we're talking to Steve Jones, host of Jonesy's Jukebox, and author of the book Lonely Boy, available online at Amazon.com. So many great stories that we've talked about today. And Jillian, you read the book on the plane going out to England.
Yes.
We barely scratched the surface.
I read it in two flights instead of two nights. It's a great page turner if you're a fan of your band, if you're a fan of the, it doesn't matter. You can just be a fan of music or just a fan of a person's life that sort of starts somewhere and then ends up completely in a different country with a different life and everything in between. And I feel like you have another book in you. Would you write another one? I mean, sort of post Sex Pistols or?
Yeah, I think so. I kind of enjoyed doing the process. I'd like to, there's a lot of other stuff that I didn't talk about.
Will you wait for those people to die off and then you'll write about it?
Probably. Yeah. No, it'd be good. I think there's another one in me.
When you read other people's take on your life, because there have been other people that have written books about the Sex Pistols, when you read the paragraphs or the pages about you, do you concur or is it sort of their version and you don't? I mean, you keep saying throughout this book, perhaps that did happen. I could have been so effed up or perhaps I remember it differently.
Well, there's definitely everyone, you know, it's like that famous quote that, who's that?
Me, you, and the truth?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who's the producer?
Robert Evans.
Exactly. Remember, he says that in his, which is one of the best.
He says in the picture, it's my favorite ever. By the way, he follows me on Twitter, just throwing that out there.
Steve Jones.
Love him.
Oh. Thanks so much for coming in.
Oh.
Unbelievable. See? Oh,
thanks. I'll take a hint.
It's two more hours coming up, 790 KABC.
News. Talk. Evolve. 790. KABC. And KABC. Los Angeles. Orange County. A Cumulus station.